Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Worth the Wait by Kenna White. Narrated by Abby Craden. Chapter 1. Val Nardi pulled her 20-year-old green Subaru behind Heidi's coffee cabin, or at least what had been Heidi's coffee cabin. It had been a drive-through establishment situated along the business district in Bonnie Lake, Washington, 35 miles west of picturesque Mount Rainier. Now, it was a small vacant building Val would spend part of her day off cleaning in preparation for the next tenant. Val worked for her older brother Joe in his restaurant, Mama Nardi's Pizzeria and Ristorante, usually as a server but occasionally in the kitchen as a cook. She also delivered pizza and acted as a hostess when needed. Anything Joe and his wife Audra needed her to do. It was steady work and paid the bills, although she rarely had days off, and if she did, it was usually on Tuesday. Owning and renting out her little building was extra income. She couldn't live off it, but she counted on it. After the loss of her own business due to pandemic restrictions, she had needed a job, and Joe needed help as he restructured his restaurant from a strictly dine-in establishment to a delivery and takeout facility. For months, the restaurant's mere survival had been in question, forcing Joe and Audra to reduce the number of employees. Some of the servers had already quit, too afraid to work in the public sector in any capacity. Some were let go when they couldn't agree to the new hours and reduced pay, but Joe had no choice. With other restaurants boarding their doors, he was determined to keep Nardi's open. People, after all, still had to eat. For some, although they couldn't dine in, having a pizza delivered to their front porch represented contact with the outside world. Contactless contact. Working from home was a challenge for many former office workers. For many, balancing work with children's online schooling meant finding time to cook was difficult at best. That created an opportunity Joe wanted to fill. When he, acting as brother protector, offered Val a job, she accepted, both to help pay her bills and to help her brother's family business survive the chaos of the COVID years, and to help Val herself survive her own life-altering losses from the virus. She'd spent many long hours wearing gloves, a mask and a face shield, and delivering pizza for her brother. There was no face-to-face contact with the customers, only a thank you shouted through a crack in the door and a small tip left under a flower pot. Val did whatever her brother needed her to do, occasionally for less than full wages. Joe and Audra's son Jackson also came on board. Fresh out of high school, he needed a job and they needed his help. Jobs for unskilled 19-year-olds were few and far between when so many had been laid off. It wasn't Jackson's first choice, but it was something. Val wasn't a large woman, not like her two brothers, both tall, muscular, and imposing. Perhaps that was why they were protective of her and always had been. She wasn't fragile either. In spite of her stature and trim build, she was capable of pulling her weight, and they knew it. As of today, Val had worked 10 days straight, a few of them double shifts at the restaurant. She had plans for her day off, but first she needed to see how much cleaning her building needed. It had been an investment she steadfastly clung to, refusing to sell it even in the most desperate times. It was her security blanket, her safety net. She hoped a quick mopping and trash removal would be sufficient. She'd then advertise it and have a new tenant paying rent before the end of the month, hopefully. It was a great location, right on the main commercial artery of Bonnie Lake. Whether another coffee barista or some other entrepreneur moved in, she didn't care. She wanted and needed it occupied and rent rolling in. Her previous tenant, Heidi, had been in business less than a year, seemed to be surviving. But increasingly, when Val stopped by to check on the property, the closed sign was in the window during what should be peak hours. Val had had early misgivings about renting to the woman, but Heidi paid the deposit and 2 months' rent up front, so Val hoped she would be successful. It wasn't until 2 months' worth of rent checks were late that Heidi informed Val she was closing the coffee kiosk permanently. This wasn't Val's first tenant to abandon a lease owing her money, but it was still disappointing. It meant she had ignored her inner voice and taken a gamble that proved regrettable. Unlocking the back door, she was greeted by the strong smell of coffee. Not a fresh, appealing, first-thing-in-the-morning coffee aroma, but a stale, strong stench of burned, reheated coffee mixed with mold and sewage. She stepped back, nose stinging and eyes watering, drew a deep breath of fresh air, then entered. The floor was a speckled mess of what she suspected were coffee grounds, along with dried milk, sticky, sugary coffee flavorings all smashed and blended together in muddy footprints. Paper napkins and cups, stir sticks and paper towels, all of them dirty, added to the mess around the room on both the floor and counters. The door to the small bathroom in the back corner stood open. The toilet had overflowed. It looked and smelled disgusting. Val gagged and her eyes watered at the stench.
"You have got to be kidding me," she grumbled as she lifted her sandal from the sticky floor, drawing back a long string of something gooey.
If she had known what she was walking into, she wouldn't have worn her new capri pants and wedge sandals. Fortunately, she had a broom, mop, trash bags, and everything she'd need in her car, because none of the cleaning supplies she kept in the tiny closet were still there. Anything and everything that wasn't attached to the wall, floor, or counter was gone. Even the fire extinguisher from the holder and the toilet paper spindle were missing. From the angle of the refrigerator, Val suspected they might have tried to take it as well. The only spot that wasn't dirty and sticky was a square patch on the stainless steel counter where the coffee maker once sat. She pulled her shoulder-length brown hair back into a ponytail and went to work, first clearing the toilet with a plunger, then collecting trash. From the looks of the dried-on mess, she suspected she'd be mopping at least twice, if not more, to clean and disinfect the bathroom and scrub sticky coffee stains off the floors. She filled three trash bags with litter and refuse. The gentle morning rain added to the sultry atmosphere, making the air heavy in spite of the pleasant temperature. She opened the sliding drive-through windows to vent the strong odor now mixed with cleanser and to cool the sweat that rolled down her face. She had just returned from loading the last bag of trash in her car when a 30-something couple in a shiny new BMW pulled up to the window and honked. Val could hear music from their car stereo even before she came to the window. She leaned out and said, "Sorry, we're closed."
"White chocolate mocha with a double shot and a caramel macchiato. Both venti,"
the man said through his partially lowered window. He bobbed his head in time with the music.
"We're closed," she said, leaning further out the open window.
"What?"
He clearly couldn't hear over the sound of his stereo.
"No coffee!"
Val shouted and shook her head. A woman in the passenger seat leaned over the driver and waved a piece of paper.
"We've got a 2-for-1 coupon,"
she yelled, as if that made a difference.
"No coffee,"
Val mouthed, realizing they couldn't hear anything she said. There was no closed sign she could show them. Heidi had even taken that. Val shrugged and shook her head again. The woman finally lowered the volume and peered up at Val.
"How can you be out of coffee?" she demanded.
"I'm sorry, but we're closed, and I'm not a barista."
Val didn't want to admit that the previous tenant had gone out of business. Hopefully someone else would be moving in soon and reopen, even if not as a coffee shack. She didn't want to discourage future customers from returning, whatever the new business was. The woman tossed a narrowed scowl at Val and said to her companion,
"She's just a cleaning lady. She doesn't know how to operate an espresso machine, even if she had coffee. Come on, Jerry, let's go to Starbucks."
She wadded up the coupon and tossed it out the window.
"I may not know how to operate the machine, but I know it's espresso, not expresso, you little twerp,"
Val called after them. Val closed and locked the window. She wanted to finish cleaning and leave before more would-be customers drove up demanding service. And if Heidi thought she was getting her security or cleaning deposits back, she had another thing coming. The pictures on Val's phone were her evidence of how the building was vacated. She had a feeling she wouldn't see the delinquent rent checks either. It wasn't worth the attorney fees or the aggravation to sue. It took another 30 minutes of wiping surfaces before she was comfortable the building was ready to show to potential tenants. At least it didn't smell repulsive and her shoes didn't stick to the floor. She locked the back door and loaded her cleaning supplies in the car when her phone chimed in her pocket. She checked the ID on her screen and considered not answering, but she knew her sister-in-law would keep calling. She had a pretty good idea what she wanted.
"Hi, Audra."
"Val, could you come in?"
"It's Tuesday and I'm not on the schedule. It's my day off."
"Could you?"
Val started the car, turned on the windshield wipers as the drizzle became a full-fledged downpour. She leaned back against the headrest, deciding how to answer. It was 12:30, the prime lunch hour.
"Tony called off," Audra added. "His mother's in town, so I bet he's off somewhere with her. And Kathy called off. She's sick. It's getting crazy, Val. We need you to come in."
Val desperately wanted to say no. She was busy and couldn't come in. She owed it to herself to have the rest of the day to herself.
She'd cleaned a disgustingly dirty building and had been stiffed on 2 months' rent. She wanted time to decompress and soothe her anger, and she desperately needed a shower. But she also owed her brother her undying allegiance. Knowing what he had done for her was enough. She couldn't say no, and seldom did. Audra knew how to play her and get what she wanted. Val strongly suspected that the request to come in for a couple of hours meant come in and work until close. I'll have to go home first. I need to shower and change.
Oh, wear whatever you've got on. It'll be all right this time. It'll be covered by an apron anyway.
The customary and acceptable dress code for the servers was black slacks or black jeans, so long as they weren't ripped or worn. Audra made that quite clear before any applicant was hired. Black shoes were also required. Nardi's provided red t-shirts, but each employee was required to have appropriate and clean apparel at the start of their shift. Audra was a stickler for appearance. Val never questioned it, even appreciated Audra's insistence the servers dress neatly. Audra's reassurance that she could wear whatever she had on meant they were severely shorthanded.
Audra, I can't. I've been cleaning and I'm all sweaty.
Cleaning what?
The drive-thru. They stripped the place clean and left a disaster. They left me hanging for 2 months' rent, too.
Give me the phone number. Don't worry. I'll have Joe take care of it.
Audra was taking control, and Val didn't need or want her help.
No, Val exclaimed. I've taken care of it. I don't want Joe calling her. I've got the security and cleaning deposits. I'm not refunding any of it.
Hell yes, you should keep that.
Val didn't like Audra's brand of interference. As helpful as she tried to be, it was invasive and overbearing. But she was family, and that was the justification for meddling in Val's business.
I'll be there, but I'll need an extra 30 minutes, Val said,
knowing Audra was going to ask why, then complain about it. She didn't like being second fiddle to anything or anyone, whatever the reason.
Extra 30 minutes for what?
She immediately demanded. I have a pan of brownies I need to drop off at the center. I promised Nana I'd have them there today.
Can't you do that tomorrow morning before you come in? I need you as soon as you can get here.
They're for bingo night. I need to drop them off by 6. How long will you need me? Not more than an hour or two, right?
Probably all evening. We've got a group coming in.
Then I'll drop them off before I come in, and I won't have to worry about it later. I promised, Audra.
Bring the brownies with you. I'll drop them off this evening. I need to run an errand.
Val heaved an exasperated sigh. Knowing the rest of her day off had been commandeered, and no excuse short of death would release her from that fact.
You'll have them there by 6?
No later. I promise the activities director, Val reiterated.
Yes, I'll have them there by 6, Audra groaned.
Val wouldn't bet a plugged nickel the brownies would be delivered on time, but she'd give Audra the benefit of the doubt.
All right, I'll bring them and be there shortly, but I am taking a shower first.
Hurry,
Audra hung up. Val pulled into traffic, knowing she had relinquished her day off and probably wouldn't get another one for at least a week, if not 2 weeks.
Why do I let myself be talked into this?
She muttered and headed home. She knew why. Since she had been shorted on rent payments, she'd be paying the utilities, insurance, and taxes on the building without income assistance from a renter. In spite of the rain, she lowered her window. The stinky bags of trash were filling her car with a disgusting odor. Or did she smell that bad?
Phew,
she gasped, hoping to diffuse the gag she felt rising in her throat.
Heidi, I hope you never ask me for a reference because you are not getting one.
Chapter 2.
As soon as Val walked in the back door of Mama Nardi's Pizzeria and Ristorante, she heard raised voices, the loudest coming from her brother, his voice thunderous and unmistakable. Val stowed her tote bag in the office, retrieved an apron, and hoped to avoid whatever chaos had him shouting. She'd considered allowing Audra to deliver the brownies to the senior living facility, but thought better of it and dropped them off herself. It seemed a wise decision now with all the commotion in the kitchen. She didn't take time to visit with her grandmother, but at least she'd fulfilled her obligation. What would Audra do to her for taking a few extra minutes? Fire her? She'd probably grumble and complain about the delay, but the time to cross town and back wasn't a big deal since technically it was Val's day off. Several of the servers frequently clocked in late, even though they were on the schedule. Val wasn't on the schedule, but she was there and ready to fill in whatever they needed.
What the hell?
Joe pulled 3 undelivered pizza boxes from the insulated sleeve and tossed them on the counter. He scanned the order slip, then opened the lids.
2 large double pepperoni, 1 large supreme with extra mushrooms,
That's what they ordered, and that's what they got.
The crabby old lady refused the order, Jackson said with a sneer. She was a bitch. Not even a tip for my time after I drove all the freaking way out there.
Did you check the address?
Joe demanded, stabbing his finger against the delivery slip.
Why isn't there a phone number on this order?
How the hell do I know? I don't write the orders. I just deliver them.
Jackson replied loudly.
Where have you been? You're late.
Joe said in Val's direction, ready to lash out at anyone who crossed his path. How can I be late? I'm not supposed to be here at all. It's Tuesday, remember? Val tied on a pocketed apron and stood at the sink washing her hands. He grumbled something, then turned to scowl back at Jackson. At 52, Joe was the oldest of three siblings and the patriarch of the family, or at least he thought so. A few pounds overweight, with a barrel chest, he looked every bit the part of an Italian restaurant owner. He wore a white apron over a white t-shirt and khaki pants, all of them speckled with red pasta sauce. Visible were the eagle tattoo on his right forearm and crossed swords on his left. He'd served 20 years in the army, where he learned his food service skills as a mess hall manager. He had gray hair he wore in the same crew cut from when he was a teenager, and a black patch over his right eye, the result of a cooking accident, which had led to his early retirement and partial disability. He refused to wear the prosthetic eye provided by the VA, claiming it didn't fit right. He couldn't be convinced, even after multiple refittings, that it took a little time to get used to it. He was hardworking, dedicated, and protective of his extended family, which included Val. His crusty edge and feisty disposition were what had made him a successful restaurateur, that and his ability to adapt. Once COVID restrictions were eased and it was safe to reopen for indoor dining, he'd continued to offer the home delivery service. Like many restaurants that survived closings, he had found a new and lucrative clientele, and delivering pizza was a perfect job for Jackson. Now 21, Jackson looked as unlike his dad as he could be. He had long curly brown hair, wore black jeans perched low on his hips as if they were a size too big, and a hoodie with a red dragon on the back. He also looked like his razor was MIA. Val waited for instructions on what they needed her to do, suspecting the argument between father and son wasn't over. She didn't have to wait long.
The old witch was supposed to pay in cash. Mom said so. $78 plus my tip, Jackson shouted. I didn't get a fucking dime. She said why the fuck should she pay $78 for pizza she didn't order?
Audra, why the hell did you send out an order without payment?
Joe demanded of the woman watching from the doorway to the dining room. Audra stepped closer and held up her hand.
Calm down, Joe, she demanded. The online payment went through, but after a few minutes it popped up as unpaid. You already had the pizzas made and boxed, so I sent them out. Besides, you've sent out orders before as cash on delivery. You let that big order go out to your buddies last month and it was over $200, she argued.
That was for the high school, not some random old lady out in the sticks trying to scam me for free pizza. From now on, if they don't pay first, we don't fill the order. Period,
he enunciated loudly, ejecting the toothpick from his mouth. Val turned to Jackson. Did the woman ask you to leave the pizza without paying for it?
Heck no. I didn't give her a chance,
he snorted.
You better not have,
Joe snapped. Then she wasn't trying to scam you, Joe, Val offered calmly, but his nostrils were still flaring.
Joseph, that's enough. Let it go.
Audra's raised voice let everyone in the kitchen know she had taken control. The subject was now closed. Joe wasn't happy. Jackson wasn't happy. Audra wasn't happy. The pizzas didn't get delivered or paid for. The boxes were back and abandoned on the counter. It was time to move on with the business of running the restaurant. Joe Nardi was the owner and head chef at Mama Nardi's, but everyone knew Audra was a dynamo to be reckoned with when it came to problems. Sometimes pushy, sometimes abrasive, sometimes an out-and-out pain in the ass. Audra was in charge, and Joe accepted that rather than provoke her ire. She was a short woman with dramatically arched eyebrows, salt and pepper hair, and bright red lipstick. She had fake fingernails she referred to as her claws, often coated with pastel nail polish. Joe and Audra had met literally by accident. She ran a stop sign one rainy night and T-boned Joe's truck. 4 months later, they were engaged, but it was another 3 years before they were married. Their relationship had been best described as two goats butting heads, but lovingly so. They'd raised one occasionally disrespectful child, survived Joe's many military deployments, and kept a business afloat through horrific financial times, so it was assumed they had something going for them. Whatever Audra said, either at the restaurant or at home, was the law of the land.
What section do you want me to cover?
Val asked Audra once the dust had settled and no one was yelling.
The back.
The section where tables could be pushed together for groups and where family gatherings were seated.
Do you have something coming in?
Val plucked an olive from the bin, suspecting this was going to be a long evening and she hadn't had lunch.
We're supposed to have a tour bus about 4:30.
How many? Val braced for the worst.
20 or so.
Val gave her a long look. This was what Audra meant when she said they were short-handed. They needed someone to cover a bus full of hungry customers and do it alone. Val had done it before. They trusted she could handle it again, but that didn't mean it wouldn't be a nightmare.
Could be a couple more, Audra said with a shrug.
Oh, goody. She checked her watch, then blew out an exasperated breath. Well, don't give me anyone else right now. Let me get it set up.
I need you to cover that six top before the bus gets here. You'll have plenty of time.
Audra nodded toward a nearby table with two adults and four children, all of the preteens bouncing and fidgeting in their chairs. Val tended to the family, bringing drinks, taking pizza orders, and cleaning two spilled glasses of sticky soda while both parents spent their time texting and ignoring their kids. She was in a hurry to get things ready for the bus's arrival, but she didn't rush the family, keeping a cheery disposition until they paid their ticket and left.
Thank you, she said politely when the man handed her a $5 tip and a $93 bill.
Val went to work loading trays with napkin-wrapped silverware and glasses of ice water. She arranged the tables and chairs, doing as much as she could before they arrived, and it was in the nick of time. She had set the last menu and silverware on the tables when a large silver and blue tour bus pulled into the parking lot. Val allowed Audra to seat the stream of senior citizens, adjusting chairs for those with canes and two with walkers. The group was on its way to Seattle for an overnight in a hotel before boarding a cruise ship, so most were giddy with anticipation. Many laughed and joked like it was old home week. It took several minutes to get everyone settled, so Val stepped back and waited. Audra was right. There were more than 20, 27, including the driver and tour director.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen,
Val announced from the end of the long table once they were all seated.
My name is Val, and I'll be your server this evening.
She smiled hospitably.
I'm going to do my very best to provide you with an unsurpassed dining experience here at Mominardi's.
She reached down and touched the shoulder of one of the nearby customers.
I promise, if I fail, it won't be from lack of trying.
The group laughed quietly.
I'm sorry, but we don't have toys in the Happy Meals. They laughed even louder.
So far, so good.
Let me get your drink orders while you look over the menu. Spaghetti Pomodoro is our special this evening. It's delicious and comes with a side salad and bread.
She moved down one side of the table, then up the other, taking orders for everything from decaf coffee to iced tea to an occasional glass of wine. When some of the people insisted on having separate checks, she politely reminded them the tour director was responsible for the total ticket, including the tip. Separate checks for a large group were a pain in the neck, and were ripe for cheapening out on a tip. When Joe decided tour groups had taken advantage of his servers and his hospitality long enough, he'd instituted the policy, giving the tour director the responsibility of paying for the entire group, making sure a suitable tip was included. If they didn't like it, they could make reservations elsewhere. The group kept Val busy for over an hour serving food and drinks, refilling cups and glasses, returning unsatisfactory orders, usually after most of it was consumed, and wishing they had picked something else altogether. Some were sweet, patient, and polite. Some, not so much. There was always one or two who couldn't be pleased, no matter what they were served. That went with the job. But Val kept her smile bright and her service attentive right through dessert. As a group was filing out, one man, well into his 70s, if not his 80s, and leaning on a cane, waved her over. A small man. He had been quiet throughout the meal, had ordered the special, eating barely half of it. He'd sipped a glass of red wine, but, like his dinner, left half of it. The serious look on his face suggested he hadn't been pleased with his meal or the service. She smiled pleasantly as she walked over to him.
"What did you say your name was, young lady?"
he asked, stooped and relying on his cane for support. He squinted at her as if his eyes couldn't focus.
"Val. Val Nardi," she replied agreeably.
"Val Nardi. Now remember that. You're a good waitress."
He nodded, then took her hand as if he wanted to shake it. His grip was weak, and his hand shook slightly, but Val felt him press something into her palm. He then folded her fingers around it, holding her fist closed.
"This is a hard job, and I appreciate your kindness.
He released her hand, gave it a pat, and turned for the door. His cane clicked with each step as he shuffled toward the parking lot and disappeared into the crowd waiting to reboard the bus.
Thank you, she called. Have a pleasant trip.
Then she discreetly checked what he had placed in her palm.
Oh my God, she gasped at the neatly folded $100 bill.
She rushed outside. He was climbing the steps into the bus, struggling with his cane for support. She hurried up to him, locked an arm through his, and helped him up the last two steps.
Thank you, sir,
she whispered and kissed his cheek.
You're welcome. My wife's name was Val, Valerie Rostowski.
He looked back at her with a thin, reflective smile as a tear glistened in his eye. He squeezed her arm and moved down the aisle to his seat. She started across the parking lot, but tossed one last look at the bus and noticed a hand pressed against the window in the last row. It was Mr. Rostowski staring out at her. She smiled and raised a hand, as if pressing her hand to his. She watched as the bus slowly pulled away, his hand never leaving the window. She heaved a contented smile and went back inside. Val helped a busboy carry the last of the dirty dishes into the kitchen, then separated the tables, once again ready for individual couples and families. She could use a 5-minute break to catch her breath, but knew she wouldn't get one. She hadn't had anything to eat since breakfast, followed by cleaning the putrefied remnants of Heidi's failed business venture. She went into the kitchen, hoping to find the 3 undelivered pizzas so she could snag a quick bite before Audra announced she had seated someone in her section. The pizza boxes were on the counter, opened and empty but for a few slivers of cold leftovers and dried cheese stuck to the cardboard. Joe saw her and held out a fresh slice of sausage pizza. He usually kept one for staff consumption, often a returned order or mistake.
Here,
he said, then went back to assembling a family-sized pizza order.
Thanks.
She took a bite, expecting it to be sweet Italian sausage, one of her favorites. She coughed and nearly choked on the bite.
Hey,
she said, covering her mouth as she coughed again.
Spicy, huh?
He said with a chuckle.
Table 14 didn't like it either.
Yes.
She picked off the chunks of sausage and dropped them in the trash.
That's better. Good old cheese pizza.
They both laughed.
Audra told me what happened with your building.
He opened one of the pizza ovens and checked the contents, then slid in a freshly made large pizza.
Why the hell did you let them get so far behind? You should have cracked down when the first month's check was a week late.
I took care of it, Joe.
Val said in an attempt to defuse the conversation before he built up a head of steam.
You can't let them walk all over you like that. It'll happen again if you don't let them know who's boss right up front. Haven't you had enough crap over that place?
I know what you're going to say next, and don't. It's mine, and I'm keeping it. One way or the other, I'm keeping it.
I've already told you, I'll make you a good offer on it when you're ready to sell. You've had one loser after another in there, and they keep taking advantage of you. If you're going to be a landlord, you've got to have balls. Set the rules and stick to them.
You never know. Someday I may open my own drive-through business, she joked, knowing how silly that sounded.
Like what?
He teased, stirring a pot of sauce.
Maid service again?
She smirked at him and headed back into the dining room. Jackson made several deliveries throughout the afternoon and evening, keeping him busy, out of the kitchen, and avoiding further arguments with Joe. The kitchen staff was careful not to mention the undelivered order. From past experience with Joe's anger, they seemed to know it was better not to poke the bear. It wasn't the first delivery faux pas, and it wouldn't be the last. Jackson held the back door for his mother as she walked out. Then he came in and dropped the insulated carrier on the counter as if there was a problem.
Where's Mom going?
He demanded, looking at the door as if he expected her to re-enter.
Costco.
Could she wait and do it later?
No.
Joe glared over at the undelivered pizza.
Why are you back already?
Because I've got a flat tire, he sneered, making it sound like it was Joe's fault.
Joe tossed a long look, then said,
Well, get out of there and change it and get the damn order delivered before it's cold.
I can't. I don't have a spare.
Val noticed him give her a quick look, then lower his eyes as if embarrassed that anyone heard him.
Why not?
Joe demanded.
I let Alex borrow it.
That was 6 months ago.
He's still driving on it. What am I supposed to do? Jack up his car and take it off?
Joe turned on him.
Yes. Get your damn tire back. Call him up and have him bring it back now. Your buddy can buy his own tire. Have him come drive you to deliver the order, then get your tire back.
He's in Vancouver until next Saturday.
Joe's jaw muscles rippled as he glared daggers at Jackson.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?